Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We trust you had an excellent 4th of July weekend. Hope you had a great time with your family and friends, and we're glad you're back with us here on the Three Martini Lunch to start the new week. And our good martini today, Jim, comes from NBC News, Meet the Press, your friend Chuck Todd. You appear on the Daily Rundown relatively frequently. Chuck Todd, a panelist on the Meet the Press, they're talking about the immigration debate and what seemed like great momentum for this bill coming out of the Senate, a pretty lopsided, better than 2-1 vote in favor of the Gang of Eight plan with the border security amendment. And now it looks like the White House is pretty skeptical on whether anything's going to get done this year, and Chuck Todd explains why to David Gregory.
White House, now they had been so confident that they were going to sign immigration reform this year. For the first time, I'm hearing that there is some doubt seeping in, that they think that maybe the House won't act. What they need is they need something to sort of force Boehner to, like, at the last minute bring it to the floor the same way that the fiscal cliff deal happened. The problem is there's no trigger at the end of this year. There isn't the end of this Congress. There isn't this. So I don't know how this happens by the end of this year. And suddenly now the White House doesn't see a path to how this happens. Right.
Jim, I don't know how accurate that skepticism is on the part of the White House, but the fact that they are that pessimistic is good news for us.
It is, and it's kind of an interesting reversal. One of the things that kind of jumps to mind there, as Todd is explaining it, is the sense that the administration really loves deadlines, really loves this atmosphere of panic, and we've seen it going all the way back to the TARP debate back in the fall of 2008, that basically there's some sort of very pressing matter that must be resolved one way or the other, and basically a piece of legislation that is huge, nobody has enough time to read through it, nobody has enough time to really think it through. The leadership goes to the members and say, pass this or the world explodes. And that is how everything from TARP to efforts to raise the debt ceiling have been passed, budget deals, fiscal cliff deals. I think it was Peggy Noonan who said this. President Obama really seems to enjoy, relish these types of crisis atmospheres. I don't know if it's because he thinks he's very cool in a crisis, or he likes seeing other people panic in a crisis, or I think he just kind of likes this sense of either I get my way or everything falls apart. And putting that kind of an ultimatum, brinksmanship, you could say. Well, as he notes, there isn't anything with this. We think our border is not secure and our immigration circumstances are a mess. But they're not getting significantly worse. They're not getting significantly better. We're just kind of, you know, hobbling along as we have for in these circumstances for a long time. John Boehner is perfectly right to wait through this thing. And somebody else had noted, whenever Obama talked about immigration, he talked, as he usually does, in these very happy talk generalities. And now he has attached himself, like there is now a piece of legislation in there. And it's a very different dynamic when you have a particular piece of information. You'd say, wait a minute, what about this provision? Wait a minute, you know, everything from the phones for ranchers to everything else that's in there. And when you have a piece of legislation, it's much easier to find things in it you don't like that people can say, look, if provision X is in there, I just can't vote for this thing. There had been some talk that maybe Republicans could go for some sort of modified DREAM Act, that ultimately the immigration issue is not really driven by these valedictorians and these young kids who come over here with their parents. They're not really the problem. The problem is, you know, basically grown-ups, members of gangs, members of drug cartels, you know, border security, all kinds of other matters. And so House Republicans might be willing to play ball on that. One of the things that's intriguing is that if you actually can work out a deal on that, you take away, quote-unquote, the hard cases, or in this case, maybe the easiest case, for letting people stay and giving them a path to citizenship. Nobody's really that worried about these wonderful, you know, shining valedictorian types. We're much more wary about the other, you know, probably 95% of these 11 million folks here. So it is good to see the brakes are being put on this, and that while a whole bunch of us would like to see some sort of immigration reform passed, we shouldn't pass something just for the sake of passing something. And I think, you know, it's good to see House Republicans are not quite so convinced that if they don't pass something immediately, they'll face some sort of dire political consequence.
No, and there are still those who believe no matter what happens, the Republicans will be demonized, and there will certainly be that attempt, assuming it doesn't pass. And even if it does pass, I'm sure there will be an effort to paint the Republicans as the bad guys, even though they're the ones that would have ultimately greased the skids for allowing it to go through. So we'll see what happens. Let's hope the White House is right on this, and we'll see exactly what tactics in the House are used to potentially scuttle this particular version of reform, because everyone agrees that reform is needed, but a lot of people, and I think most of the people who are right want to see it done in pieces and in the right order. Mike Lee in the Senate, particularly big on that. On to martini number two now, Jim. And we were not together on Friday for the three martini lunches, but that is when we got the latest jobs report from the Labor Department for the month of June. The unemployment rate still at 7.6%, 190,000 jobs created in the month of June, plus 70,000 additional jobs discovered created in previous months. And so the conventional wisdom was, well, clearly the job market is improving. More people are entering the market, and that's why the overall unemployment rate did not go down. Not true, because when you look at what a lot of people are now calling the real unemployment rate, the U6, which factors in people taking part-time jobs when they'd rather have full-time jobs, and people just exiting the labor market altogether, that jumped by half a point, up to 14.3%. So I'm not exactly sure what the rationale is for the number staying exactly at 7.6%, but the idea that things are improving to the point where a lot more people are deciding to jump back into the labor pool does not seem to be accurate.
Yeah, two things that are really kind of depressing about this. The first, obviously, the numbers themselves, which are not terrible. There's some jobs being created. Greg, would it be easier just to replay some of our previous discussions of fast jobs reports?
Probably.
Because it's the same thing. I mean, you know, look, yeah, we're creating jobs. We're not creating nearly at the pace we need to bring down unemployment. Unemployment stays level, but it's still what is traditionally seen as a very high level. I mean, it was between 4 and 6% for the entirety of the Bush years. And you have a whole bunch of folks who are just, you know, long-term unemployed. Prospects are still grim. We're creating part-time jobs, but as anybody who's tried to make ends meet in a part-time job knows, that's not really helping things. So a lot of people think this is the impact of Obamacare. And if you want to say really a bad news, it didn't even make much of a splash. Now, maybe some of it's because it came over a holiday weekend. But when you listen to the Sunday shows, you listen to what people in Washington are talking about, there is this perception that the economy is fixed or that it's about as good as it's going to get. And we got it. You know, we passed a big stimulus bill and check the box. Everything's fine. You don't hear discussion in a tone of crisis. And even though you could argue that we're not in a crisis circumstance, it is still a sense of we're not in an economic good spot. And we're not, doesn't look like we're going to be in a good spot anytime soon. If you are unemployed or you're going through hard times right now, one, a whole bunch of bad policies are coming down the pike through Obamacare, et cetera, et cetera. Apparently, Obama's doing another pivot to economy event today. This is, you know, if he pivoted anymore, we'd actually be deeper than the Deepwater Horizon drilling thing because he's so pivoting enough time to create a drill. You know, this is a frustrating kind of complacency in Washington about the state of the economy. Look, Obama got reelected on this economy, so maybe the public doesn't see this as that much of a problem. You know, unsurprisingly, there is this kind of blasé acceptance of this state of the economy. And I think most of us look at the economy outside our windows and say, look, there's a lot, you know, we could be doing a lot more. There are a whole bunch of really untapped talent in the American people right now, long-term unemployed, people working part-time, people maybe working under, you know, getting paid under the table or occurring in kind of the black market economy. It's frustrating and really not much sign it's going to change anytime soon.
And I think that's kind of the mentality they're trying to get us used to. Ray LaHood leaving as transportation secretary in the last few days, basically telling people, don't expect gas prices to get any lower than they are. This is just where they're going to be for in perpetuity and probably even higher. So go get yourselves a hybrid.
I understand Jack Nicholson's "What if this is as good as it gets?" is the new the new slogan of the administration.
Sadly, and what's even sadder is that the American people at least seem to buy it last year, and we'll see if they buy it in perpetuity here. Jim, on to the crazy, the much-needed crazy martini today. And we, of course, had great fun with the news that Anthony Weiner, he, of course, of Twitter infamy, deciding to run for mayor. It's something he'd wanted to do for a very long time, decided that his own personal scandal was certainly no hindrance to jumping back into the political fray. And so you've got kind of a political circus in the mayoral race. But apparently, that's not enough for the primary ballot in New York City come September, because now this guy is throwing his hat into the fray for another city office.
I have been given much. The love of my family, the faith and trust of the people of New York, and the chance to lead the state. I am deeply sorry that I did not live up to what was expected of me.
In case you didn't know, that's former New York Governor Eliot Spitzer, also known to some as client number 9, who was forced to resign in 2010. He is now mounting a very late bid for city controller. He just is starting the petitions today. He has to have them in by Thursday. He's currently facing a pretty tough challenge because Manhattan Borough President Scott Stringer is the favorite at this point. But to make the race even juicier, the Libertarian candidate in this race is Kristen Davis. And if you don't know who that is, She was the madam of the organization that orchestrated the tryst with Elliot Spitzer and the escort. Looking forward to those debates, I'm sure, aren't you, Jim?
You're talking about bizarre twists. This is a bizarre twisted twist in New York's politics. During the whole scandal, I remember thinking, boy, wouldn't it be great to do a parody of the one-hit wonder from Lou Bega, Mambo Number 5, and to do Client Number 9, and to do a parody song. And I never got the chance to do that. Well, with Elliot Spitzer returning to the fore, I could finally get a chance to do that. Also, as I mentioned in the morning jolt, Greg, Elliot Spitzer had a show on Current TV. He also, for a while, the geniuses at CNN decided that Elliot Spitzer was exactly the guy you wanted to anchor the 8 p.m. newscast opposite Kathleen Parker. I know it will stun you that Elliot Spitzer ended up having issues with his female co-host.
No.
Unthinkable there. I remember reading somewhere, apparently what CNN, you know, someone pointed out to the CNN executive that it's conceivable Elliot Spitzer might not attract female viewers in the numbers that CNN would like to see, that maybe some might be a little repelled by him. After all, he did inspire a Juliana Margulies television series. And the response of the CNN executive was, I don't care, making me not feel not quite so bad that I don't have my own television show, Greg, because if the attitude is, well, I don't care, you know, if you're surprised that Spitzer's unable to attract female viewers, well, gee, you know, maybe you don't belong in television programming. So now Spitzer is back. I am kind of struck by this of, you know, Mark Sanford, Anthony Weiner, all these scandals. Let's recall, one, Elliot Spitzer violated the law. Like, you know, cheating on your wife is bad. But, you know, it is illegal to, you know, do the horizontal mambo with prostitutes. And there were some, you know, serious arguments that Elliot Spitzer had gotten into financial shenanigans in order to hide the payments for all the, his activities. And, well, the prosecutor looked at this and decided there was not enough evidence. A lot of people seemed to believe the prosecutor basically said, look, he's resigning from office. Let's not, you know, that they weren't going to push this any further. He was going to slink off into the shadows and never bother anybody again. Obviously, he isn't. And so we will see what the voters of New York think. I think this is a rather not reassuring turn of events. I was one of those guys who was, you know, pretty open to Mark Sanford, but I think Sanford had really gone through and tried to do his best to persuade people. He understood the mistakes he had made and all that stuff. I get a real vibe of opportunism from Spitzer on this. So I guess it's in the hands of the voters of New York City now.
Have fun on the polls, whatever day that is in September.
I'm pumped. Oh, that wasn't even an intended double entendre.
No, it wasn't. But if these are your best choices in New York City, I shudder for the next 4 years. But you get the leadership you deserve, unfortunately.
Isn't there some garden variety crook they could write in?
I think Mark Green should run again. He's only run about 5 or 6 times for mayor in New York City, but I'm not sure he'd be any better. There's just not a real good option, certainly on the Democratic side in this thing. So hold your nose, people. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.